Ooh, they changed the recording thing for Zoom.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi, Jordan. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Well, that's a sick t-shirt. That's a great way to start out.
Thanks. Actually, when I was on my way, when I met you in Ohio or in Pittsburgh, we were flying there. We got stuck in Minneapolis, and the one kind of the silver lining of it, I guess, was that they have a Prince store in the airport in Minneapolis. Yeah, okay. So I went nuts, bought some stuff for myself and the family, and yeah,
that's awesome.
I love Prince.
Got to be the coolest airport ever.
Yeah, yeah, definitely was like, oh, this isn't so bad.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, welcome.
Did everyone in the store have to wear like the high heels like Prince did?
I wish.
The workers?
It was one guy who clearly was just not a big Prince guy because I had all these questions and he's like, I don't know.
I heard some crazy rumor that he had enough music to release like basically a new song every day for 10 years. Like in his vault.
Yeah, he would just sit on it, right?
And then like his wife could just do that every day for 10 years and keep Prince alive. So
yeah, there's still albums coming out.
Yeah, right. All right, guys, welcome to the Toddcast. We are here tonight with our special guest Jordan Blum. I'm John, your normal guest, or your normal host. Sorry. Wow, it's been a long freaking day. With me as always is Tim.
Hello.
Jordan, thanks for coming on the show. This is awesome.
Yeah.
So, thank you for having me.
We will dig into the book and the show here in a few minutes. We're going to just remind people of some events while we get people in the chat. And first, we're going to start out with something next weekend. It's a surprise sale. It is NDC Shirt Day. So you spend $20 in any NDC and you're going to get a free NDC shirt. Those will be delivered to the stores next week in transfer. They are random shirts with random NDC logos, and come early so you can get your size, one per person. Then September 18th, we have our basement sale going on in Elwood, 500,000 sorted dollar books, all in one room, 2 days ever a year. This is the only day this fall. You can get your early bird tickets on our website at ndcomics.com. We also have our clearance sale going on in the Comic Cave at the VFW in Elwood. That's every Saturday from 12 to 5. Thanks for everybody who went to cosplay karaoke last night down at the Hard Rock. It was a freaking blast, and we raised $300 for the Heroes Initiative. We're going to do our next one October 14th. It's Thursday night, so we will not have a show that night. And it will be themed horror, so come in your favorite scary or horror film cosplay and sing out your heart for charity. And then lastly, October 16th and 17th is our Three Rivers Comic Con Light. Outside at the waterfront, it is an outdoor Comic Con for free from noon to 7 on Saturday and noon to 5 on Sunday. There'll be lots of guest artists and vendors. The updated guest list is put on the website today, so make sure you guys check that out. So, all right. And then, Tim, we have an awesome, awesome contest going on tonight. I'm going to let you explain it.
Yeah.
Tell them what they win.
So two things, just a quick reminder, because there was some shipping issues that Perry Crow, who was on the show, his book Stud and the Blood Blade is out this week. So stop by and pick up your copy. That's the first book from Comics Experience. Now, the contest is essentially we want to know what you guys would like to be called, our fans of 7 to 8 people. We want to know what you guys would like to be referred to as. So I put a post up earlier in the week. Everybody can post one time a name, and then later in the show, we're going to go through them and we'll let Jordan pick the one that he thinks is the best. So he'll be able to leave his mark on this show permanently. And then the winner is going to get, what do we got here? We got MODOK Head Games, written by Jordan, and then a MODOK Marvel Legends figure.
I don't have that with me to show you.
It is awesome, though. I have
one. But I swear.
Take it from me. It's incredible.
It's like, it's got a name for a exchangeable faceplate. It's like a Mr. Potato Head. It's freaking amazing. So so we'll do that like a little bit later towards the end of the show. But for now, Jordan, thanks for being on. This was a nice bit of chance. I was working and Jordan comes in. He's like, hey, do you have the MODOK book? And I'm like, oh, we're like, yeah, it's back here. It's an awesome book. He's like, thanks, I wrote it. I'm like, oh, you should come be on our podcast. He's like, that'd be amazing. So kind of just fell in our lap. So
what brought you to Pittsburgh?
Your story is unbelievable. Thank you. Well, my wife is from Youngstown, Ohio. Okay. And we both went to Ohio University together. And then we have a lot of friends in Ohio and Pittsburgh. So we went down for the day to visit some Pittsburgh friends. And one of them happens to be a huge comic nerd like myself. And we kind of always meet up at Comic-Con. And since we couldn't do it this year, he's like, let's go to the next best thing. I got to take you to the store. And I was blown away. Like, for me, my favorite thing at cons is like dollar bins. So yeah. I was like, I should get a hotel room and just stay here for a week, because I feel like I could spend the entire time just kind of digging. And the back issue selection you guys had was unbelievable. I was able to kind of put together some missing issues for, I've been collecting some Blue Beetle and Booster Gold stuff, and you guys had a ton. I honestly, it's one of the best stores I've ever been to.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
We really appreciate that.
It's high praise.
Yeah, that is our largest store outside of the basement. But we have six stores that surround the city, so come visit all of them. They all have a little bit of a different flavor, and it's a lot of fun.
Dollar books is my favorite thing too. It's so much fun. I could spend like all day going to dollar books. So
yeah, it's a treasure hunting part of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would rather go to the back issues where they're sorted. So.
So typically what we do, John, do you want to tell them about it? Like how we run it?
So normally this is what we do. We're going to start with having you give us your origin story, which is how you got into comics. And then like why you're into comics and things you're working on. And then you can kind of pitch anything you are working on currently. And then we'll talk about MODOK, both the book and the series afterwards, because we have a lot of questions about the series specifically, because there was a lot of funny things in there.
Oh, thank you.
And it was great. So, origin story. Go for it.
Okay. Comics have been a part of my life since I was a little kid. Like, there's a picture of me in a high chair with like a Mark Gruenwald Captain America. Like, they were just always there. I think my dad learned to speak English from reading comic books when he moved to the country. So he grew up with them, kind of passed them down to me. And then it's just been kind of a love affair from day one. Even the first time I went to a library, my mom said, I just like beelined it right to the comic rack and was scooping up those like superpowers, Jack Kirby comics and all that. So yeah, you know, I started, I think like anyone else, I read a ton of Superman, Batman, and Spider-Man. And then the X-Men hit me, I think, at just the right time. And I loved you know, how convoluted and insane their continuity was. Like, I loved the challenge of trying to pick up, I think it was like that classic X-Men, that's the issue after Dark Phoenix saga, where like Cyclops is going through the entire Silver Age up until Dark Phoenix. And I was like, This is so much history. There's so many characters here, like, and trying to make sense of it. And then you would pick up a random issue and you'd be like, you know, why is Psylocke suddenly a ninja? And you know, what, like trying to make sense of like a 17-year run of Chris Claremont became like the most fun thing. It was like you were an archaeologist kind of like excavating, you know, all this history. And so I loved it. And then the Jim Lee stuff hit and the cartoon, and it was just an obsession. And I always kind of related to that book the most. I was like, you know, one of the only Jewish kids in a very Irish Italian Catholic town, so the idea of kind of being an other, feeling like an outsider, you know, was something I just gravitated towards, and wanting to find the Xavier Mansion. I grew up in Westchester, so it supposedly was very close to but I could never find it. But you know, so it was X-Men for a long time. But I, you know, I kept reading everything, and I think, you know, my taste grew, but I always kind of came back to the superhero stuff. And, you know, to this day, I'm probably reading like 15 books a week. Like, I'm out of control, but I turned it into a career. It's research.
Yeah.
But you know, it's and it was something that like influenced everything I wrote. I started television and American Dad and Community, but I feel like I kind of always go back to that long form storytelling that kind of comes from comics, and being able to do that with MODOK was really fun in you know, crafting a season and a seasonal arc, and you know, having your big bad for the season, stuff like that. You know, obviously was so heavily influenced by the comics themselves, and I've been very lucky that, you know, since MODOK, it's kind of opened a lot of doors to both work in comics. You know, I've got some stuff. I'm doing some Spider-Man stuff for Marvel right now. They haven't, I don't think they've announced yet. And then some creator-owned stuff that I can't really talk about yet for another big publisher. But it's been really cool because comics are my first love, even more so than TV and film. And I feel like I've been studying and researching and analyzing how to write them my entire life. So when we were given the opportunity to write the MODOK one, it was like, I feel like this is the job I've been preparing for, you know? And I love the TV stuff. It's my, you know, it's my career, but honestly, there's nothing more pure and incredible than writing comics. And it was like, there's never a moment where it felt like work or writing. It was just an absolute joy the whole time. So I was like, I've got to keep doing this. I hope they let me do more. And luckily they have. So yeah. And then on top of that, some other, I can't, this is such a bummer. I can't really announce any of, there's some other comic book projects I've been adapting elsewhere for TV, but it's a little early to discuss them.
That's all right. Let us know whenever you get, whenever you can announce like whatever comics and stuff, and we'll make sure we put it on the Facebook page and let everybody know. And we'll get a good bit of copies of stuff that you're working on. So
absolutely. Absolutely. There's some, it's been a very cool experience to be like, I'm a fan of this. I want to make this into something, and getting to work with a lot of the original writers and publishers and stuff. And it's such a cool kind of fanboy moment for me.
What came first? Was it the TV show or was it the book? Like, which one were you, and how did that come about?
So it was the TV show came first. So I had done a pilot at Fox a long, long time ago, but Patton and I had done it, or he had been brought in and was going to star in it. And we've always kind of kept in touch, and, you know, we'd run into each other at Golden Apple, is our comic store in Los Angeles. So, you know, we kept talking over the years, and the exec who we developed that pilot with moved to Marvel Television. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, let's talk. I've got some ideas. And they had a few shows that they were interested in, you know, me pitching on, but Patton and I brought the MODOK, you know, we knew that was the one we wanted to tackle. And I think anywhere else, maybe you'd get like a what MODOK, but Marvel knows their characters. And they were like, we absolutely understand the idea of building the sitcom out, because they were wanting to develop a lot of kind of a whole line of comedic shows. So, you know, the idea of where does this guy go at night? Like, you know, we in the comics, you really only see him as this very arch villain. And he's got this tunnel vision of defeating the Avengers and taking over the world. But like, when he leaves that panel, where does he go? And it kind of led us down this path of, you know, asking these questions. Well, like, does he have a family, or what does it take to actually run an evil organization? Like, there's got to be all this overhead, and you have to deal with these personalities and HR. And it, you know, once you start to kind of ask those questions, you know, you end up in these really funny places with a character who's honestly one of my favorite designs ever. You know, people, it used to be like a dirty word, like comic booky, you know, when a lot of these early movies came out, everyone's trying to ground stuff. But to me, like, that's the most magical word to sell me on something. If you tell me something's comic booky, I'm so in. And I don't think there's anything more comic booky than MODOK's design. I mean, it's like pure Jack Kirby. So, you know, the idea of taking a character that is essentially a Marvel monster and then building a world around him and relationships and trying to get you to invest in him and understand him. I loved that challenge. So that ended up, you know, turning into the show, and we were kind of off to the races there. And then once I think we had finished the writer's room and we were in production, Marvel reached out about Pat and I doing a comic series. And we told them, we're like, we don't want to do just like an adaptation of our show. We've written 10 episodes of it. We really love our version of MODOK, but if we're going to write a comic version of MODOK, we want to do the 616 MODOK. And that kind of led us to talk about like the similarities and differences between the two takes. And then that kind of became this meta story of like, can you reconcile the show version with the comic version? Because they are different, you know, takes. And the idea of what the comic version would do if he suddenly had the memories of our show version, it would drive him insane. It doesn't compute with his programming. And he would think that someone was tampering with him. But maybe there's something kind of deep down that MODOK desires a family and why. And that kind of led us on the story for MODOK Head Games.
Well, that was one of the interesting parts that I liked about the book, because I had read the book after I watched the show. So like, you know, when it opens up and you see the family, I'm like, oh, are we going to get this introduction? And the way that you took it, by the time I get to the end, I'm thinking, you know, this is going to be with family. And I was blown away. It was a really fun book. So,
oh, thank you.
There was a lot of cool moments in there, you know, MODOK, all the animals that are becoming MODOKs because they're just, you know, making their way into the old facility. MODOK with the Ant-Man helmet on was fantastic.
So we have an awesome screenshot of that here.
Yeah, the art on this book too was fantastic. Yeah,
Scott Hepburn is incredible. We would just throw the craziest ideas at him, and he would just plus them all and add his own. And you know, I think Scott was perfect for this book, which was like, you know, insane Marvel Universe craziness mixed with like smaller emotional moments, and he can nail all of that. But yeah, we were like, all right, you know, how can we do something new in AIM, like a fight scene? Well, their whole thing is they make weapons and technology. What if they're reverse engineering all the Marvel heroes, you know, weaponry? Wouldn't that be really fun if MODOK just gets it all? So we tried to cram in as much as we have. You know, it's like Black Knight's like lightsabery sword from the 90s, and he's got Wolverine claws and Deadpool, you know, grenades.
I love that he has an ultimate nullifier. That's like my favorite part.
Yeah. Yeah. Herbie's in there.
Yeah. Evil Herbie. You know, I think to me, you know, we obviously, you know, we wouldn't even come close to this, but we always kind of, Pat and I are huge Grant Morrison fans. And, you know, I think Grant Morrison is the king of, you know, balancing the fun craziness of comics with, like, and then grounding it with humanity. And I think that's what we were trying to shoot for, is like, let's have the most fun we can in this series, pack it full of ideas, but hopefully make you care and invest, you know, in MODOK on this journey, because he's not a character you often feel for in the comics.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes me want an ongoing.
Tim sent a bunch of cool screenshots of like just kind of what you're saying, like random moments of what, like, you're never gonna see that, you never saw that coming, like this one.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Again, if you want to make a villain sympathetic, put Nazis around them so they can kill Nazis.
Right.
This was one of my favorites.
Like I said, I'm a huge X-Men fan. So I was like, have we seen Skids on Krakoa? Can we use her? Yeah. And we were very lucky that Jordan White was our editor. And, you know, he runs the X-Men line. And he was gracious enough to let us play in the sands of Krakoa and do this. And, you know, I'll say, like, Gwenpool, I was terrified to write her for two reasons. One, you know, Jordan was the editor who oversaw her book and her creation and is, you know, very protective of her, and her fans are even more protective. And I remember when they solicited this issue, I got all these tweets that were like, what are your intentions with our Gwenpool? Like, do not mess this up. Like, pretty much like as close as you can get to death threats that aren't full death threats. And I was like, we got to do this right. Cause I think if you do her wrong, she just comes off like female Deadpool, and that's not the character, you know?
Yeah,
so yeah. It was honestly that was the most terrifying issue to write, because I just didn't want to get her wrong. Cause I know that fan base loves her so much, but we thought this would be a good bit to kind of introduce new readers to what she can do, her powers. And I think I always love these editor notes. So we thought it would be kind of a fun gag.
That's just a couple of panels. I think it's the whole page. And then Cyclops at the end is like, what's going on? And Skid's like, I'm done. I don't want to be here anymore. Tosses this giant card. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was mostly because I selfishly just wanted to write Cyclops. And I was like, that was me cramming him in there. But I think it's a fun way to kind of meet Gwenpool. And that's where they had left her, was on Krakoa at the end of her last miniseries. And that it kind of fit this bigger story we're telling, because, you know, to us, we were looking at MODOK's history, right? And MODOK, sometimes he's a very terrifying villain. Other times he's used for kind of more comedic effect in the Gwenpool series. And we started to like, well, let's come up with like an in-continuity reason for this. And we came up with this idea that every time he's kind of killed, because he's murdered all the time, like people are always killing MODOK, he's rebooted. But he, you know, he's not always the same. He's always like a different variation of him. So that's what we kind of designed the series to be, which was him, you know, basically taking a tour of his own Marvel history. So he's got AIM and Monica in the first one. He's got Iron Man and the Serpent Society, who murdered him in like the 80s. Like, we wanted to touch on all these things. Gwenpool, who he was, you know, he's big in her series, and kind of, you know, go through the, he's trying to solve this mystery, and it leads him through his own comic book history. And oh my god, this page by Scott,
that was fantastic.
That's crazy that he pulled this off. You get his whole origin here, and I love that it's in him, and the wires that turn into like the veins, and you know, Scott, he's just a master at this. And him, you can see him like using different textures for the family stuff, like the pencils are different. I went nuts and I bought a lot of pages from this comic original. Well, Scott gave me a lot too, I should say. He's the best. So he sent me a few. And then because it was just like, it's the ultimate dream, right? Where you write something and then it's real suddenly. Like, that to me is my favorite thing about comics, is the immediacy of it. Because in TV, you know, it takes a year plus sometimes to make something. Here, you know, it was just, you wrote the script and bam, there it was. And then a few months later, you're holding it in your hand. So it was just such a thrill to get these pages back from Scott.
We have a couple more screenshots here. We have this one.
Yeah, this was the...
I love Sloth Doc.
He's not long for this world.
No, he is not.
Yeah, this to me is like, you know, a moment where you can get inside his head a little bit. You know, that was something we wanted to do too, is we came up with this idea that, because there are all these different versions of MODOK, including that he was once this normal human, we wanted to have these kind of competing voices in his head. So he has, you know, his the way he talks to AIM is the, you know, very grandiose arch supervillain, you know, way. In his head, he's got this kind of computer brain that's calculating things, and he's got this self-doubt that's sort of creeping in. And we wanted to have all these kind of competing voices in MODOK's head to show you that there's a lot going on with the character. And, you know, moments like this where you're like, who knew that it's super painful to be a MODOK? Yeah. And there's actually like a weird moment of compassion.
Yeah, it's very humanizing.
So it was really fun to try and find those moments that, you know, make you care about him, but don't break the character. He still needs to be a villain. He still needs, you know, to do those kind of things. And that's sort of what we want to do with the ending too, is like what he does to his dad at the end. It's incredibly villainous, even though you're kind of rooting for him to do it.
Yeah, that was actually the last one we had for that.
Cool. It was I love the crazy Marvel Universe stuff. And I think I was like talking about like the Mark Gruenwald run in Cap in the 80s. You know, we pulled a lot from that for the show as well, where it's like the big insane ideas, Armadillo and the Bar with No Name, that all comes from that run.
What were some of the like challenges for you then, going from doing the book and then jumping in and doing a script for the show, or you know, handling like the creation of that? So
I think we wanted to, you know, reimagine MODOK a little bit. You know, it's like, how can we make this character, you know, kind of make sense in the story we want to tell, but also make sure that it feels like MODOK, that we're not just like, you know, changing his voice or who he is, but still making a comedy around him. And, you know, it was always, you know, just making him brilliant in that he's a scientist, but he's an idiot when it comes to relating to people, you know? And I think that that's where we kind of found the comedy for the character. And, you know, and I think that really the hardest part of the show was not forcing all these cameos and Easter eggs in that were just fun for us. Like, we really tried to make sure that they made sense for the story we were telling. So, you know, we have Arcade in there, but it's because he's helping build this family therapy, you know, episode. Or the bar with no name guys are there because this is a story about how hard it is to make friends in your 40s, because we're really telling a story about, you know, having a midlife crisis. That's what really the show is a super villain who loses everything and has to kind of figure out who he is from the bottom up. So we always tried to make sure that, you know, the people who were popping up, even Iron Man was there so that he could show you how far MODOK had fallen and wasn't in there just so, you know, or I would have had all the X-Men just running through the show, you know. But there were some fun surprises. We had all the Marvel handbooks in the writer's room. So there was episode 3. We were trying to figure out like an alien menace that he could unleash. That was kind of funny because we knew we wanted to like mislead it with the Brood, who I've always loved, but we needed something kind of comedic. And we found the Seagramites, which were from one Hercules issue in the 80s, and they were great. Like, we didn't change anything about them. They are hedonistic, like, master distillers from an alien planet, and that we're like, great, we'll just push that a little bit. But we drop them in, and you find these little, it's kind of surprises, you know, characters you start to fall in love with that you didn't even, you know existed, like Tenpin. I wasn't that familiar with, you know, and he ended up being a character we loved writing when we put him in the show. So it was kind of fun to discover those little nuggets, you know, in the Marvel universe that haven't been touched. And I think it speaks to the Marvel universe that, if you know, every character has the potential, I think, to have a really fun story built around them.
That's awesome. So how did you guys get hooked up? Like, obviously you and Patton started to put this together. How did you guys get hooked up with the guys from Robot Chicken to make it work as we kind of segue into the show more often?
Mm-hmm. So we had tests kind of all over town done for the show, 2D, you know, all different types. And Stupid Buddy did this. They did two for us. They did a 2D one and they did a stop motion one. And the stop motion one was so unique and different. And I feel like, you know, it's definitely a crowded field right now for animation. There's a lot of, you know, it's a great time for it, but there's so much of it. And the thing that they had developed that I love is they had this kind of handheld camera work that's actually, you know, it's motion controlled cameras shooting it. So it feels handheld and kind of verite. And, you know, for a show that's a behind the scenes look at what it's like to be a supervillain at work and at home, that style really made sense for the story we were telling. And I thought it was a really cool way to like be in these giant, insane places like Asgard or AIM or, you know, Avengers Tower, but have this very kind of, you know, documentary feel almost to just following around this guy and grounding him and making him feel, you know, human, even though he's a giant floating head. So I just thought it was really unique and cool. And it was also very cinematic, and they were very eager to not just do Robot Chicken. You know, Robot Chicken's supposed to look like toys. And, you know, here they really wanted it to be kind of glossier. And, you know, even with the puppet design and the sets, and then the way they shot it. So I loved the idea of kind of stepping out of my comfort zone, because I'd done 2D my whole life. And try something new. And I think, remember, Pat and I had just seen Spider-Verse, I think, and we were talking and we're like, man, that felt so different and so unique. That animation style was so fresh. And like, let's just take a big swing. Let's do the stop mo. And, you know, and now I'm really happy with, you know, making that decision and how the show came out.
I thought it added to the feel of the character more than anything else. Like, had that been just regular 2D, I don't think it would have hit as hard, not even on the comedic end, but just all over. Like, it just was like the perfect vibe. Like once you mm-hmm. like once you got into it and you're like, okay, we're in stop motion, you know. Because at first I was like, oh man, is this just gonna be like a giant robot chicken, like multi-episode mm-hmm. thing? And then you get 10 minutes in and you're like, never mind, we're good. So
yeah, good call. I was amazed that you thank you that you kind of stop thinking about the puppets. Like when you see a MODOK, he just looks like he is real or exists in that space, you know. Like that's I think the cool thing about it. And Pat always said this too. He goes, we're adapting this Jack Kirby design. Like Jack Kirby was so dimensional, you know, like everything was always coming out at you and leaping off the page, that it feels like this is the best way to kind of, you know, do a Kirby version, is to have it feel like it is multi-dimensional. I there was moments, especially with the beekeepers, where you just sort of forget that they're puppets. You're like, oh, that could be an actor in there, you know, for all I know. So I also love that.
Think it added because of the way the light would hit things, it would add the shadow, so that would give it that depth of reality. I think it really worked out. Like that was pretty genius. And like the animation was just nuts. Like I was surprised some of the stuff that got pulled off. Like the tank getting pulled off was awesome. The portal animation was great, that worked in with everything. Oh man, the concert scene, just everything about it, just it worked so well. And I think it added a humanity to the family characters as well. So
yeah, I mean, just so much love to all of the people who built the puppets and the costumes and the sets and our VFX team. Like I think this probably had more VFX shots than a regular Marvel movie, just in that, like, you know, outside of MODOK, all the mouths were digital, you have to erase there's this like kind of gear holding MODOK in place. You know, he's hovering essentially. They have to erase all that. It was a ton of work on a lot on all their ends, but they're just amazing craftsmen in each, you know, each part of it. So it was so cool to just watch that stuff come alive.
Did you get to keep any of the puppets?
I have a MODOK. I have the original MODOK because they did a test originally. The one that sold us on it. And then by the time we started the show, they realized that like the puppet needed to do so much more. So he was like MODOK 1.0. And then there was like 30 2.0s made that, you know, cause he was like a Swiss Army knife. Cause they had all, he had have things come out of them.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very demanding puppet. They had to like really do a lot of R&D to figure out how that's going to work. Cause it's not just their normal, like, you know, human figure character. So I was allowed to have the original MODOK, the first one, and I have them in a case in this room. So
that's awesome.
You had a really good cast too for the show. I mean, there's some amazing voice actors that were on this show. I mean, every episode it was like you heard somebody different, you know. So I thought that was awesome, that so many people, I don't know how that all works, but you know, hearing Bill Hader in there, I love listening to Bill Hader do anything. Ben Schwartz was in there. He's like a hero for me. I love him. So that, you know, there's a lot of great actors in the show. I thought that was awesome too.
Well, we were really lucky. Lou, we wrote for Ben. Ben was in the test. Cause Ben was in the other pilot that Pat and I had done together, and there's a friend. And so we're like, let's get the gang back together for MODOK, since he never got to be your son in this other thing we were developing. So that was a blast, because I love working with those guys. And, you know, we were able to even get them in a booth for episode 106, which is like the big Lou episode. And so that was awesome. And, you know, some of it was casting, where we were lucky, we got everyone we asked for. You know, Melissa Fumero for Melissa, John Daly for the Adaptoid, Amy Garcia for Jody, and you know, Beck Bennett and Sam is so good as Gary. Like it was a dream cast. Like there was no second picks, you know. We got everyone we wanted, and you know, some of that was casting and some of it was Patton, you know, asking a few friends, hey, do you want to, you know, be on the show? But it was amazing. And, you know, there was some fun things we wanted to do. You know, we knew that Nathan Fillion had been cast as Wonder Man in the background mm-hmm. of the Guardians of the Galaxy. So we're like, let's let him just be Wonder Man. And we actually, I was tweeting with James Gunn. We got his blessing after the fact, but you know, we stole that one from him. You know, John Hamm, I thought was such a good Iron Man, you know, cause we were making this right when Endgame came out, and we're like, well, we don't have, you know, we're not going to have that Iron Man. You know, but what how do you fill those, you know, boots? And we were talking about like, well, who are the other people? Who is it that you would, if you couldn't have Robert Downey Jr., like who's the other dream casting? We're like, oh, John Hamm's so funny too. Like, let's let him do his own thing with the character. So we were really lucky to get people like that. Whoopi Goldberg playing Pound Cakes. That was just asking, you know, and she was just like, yeah, this is so fun. No one ever asked me to do these kinds of things. And, you know, Bill Hader was a friend of Patton's, and we were so lucky to have him be Angar. And I love casting these huge stars as these like D-list Marvel characters. So it was so fun. It was an absolute blast to get to work with those people.
Awesome. So Tim and I each have a favorite episode per se, and we have some questions about it. So I'm going to let Tim go first. Yours actually comes in earlier in the season than mine. So
I just really like the Third Eye Blind episode with the concert. I like the idea of it. You know, it was one of the earlier times where you got to see him as a husband that kind of like let somebody down. With you know, something that they wanted to do a long time ago. And I'm a big Third Eye Blind fan. So I was like, is this real? Is he a Third Eye Blind fan? Is somebody in the writing room a Third Eye Blind fan? Or are they making fun of my band? Like, I wore my shirt today.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So
no one's making fun of it. I also grew up with Third Eye Blind, love Third Eye Blind. The idea of taking that song and then doing like a slow, sad version was like written in the outline. I remember originally like an Amy Mann like cover, and then Patton's like, oh, I know Amy Mann, she'll do it. So the fact that we got an Amy Mann cover of Third Eye Blind was insane.
That's awesome.
But I love that episode too, because I think, you know, the pilot, you're being thrown a lot of characters, a lot of setup, there's a lot of, this is his world. And then you're introduced to this idea that MODOK has a wife, and you're like, what? How does this work? Why would anyone marry this guy? I don't know if I believe this marriage, which is kind of what we wanted you to be at. And then we wanted like, well, let's immediately address it. Like episode two will hopefully, if you walk away at the end, you're like, I actually believe in this couple. And I'm kind of sad they're not together. You know, we wanted it to be like really bittersweet, because that was something we always wanted in the show, is that we didn't want to always undercut every single thing with a joke, or, you know, we wanted just kind of some moments to be real. And that was a blast to be able to do that right out of the gate. And of course, you know, usually you wait maybe at least 8 episodes to do your time travel. And we're like, nope, episode 2, let's just get right into it. And I love that one, because I think it really sets up who they are. I think Amy is so good in that episode with Patton. And I think you hopefully buy their relationship by the end of it, that you're invested. You're like, I hope, are they going to get back together? I don't know.
Yeah, you absolutely.
And that was kind of the goal for that one. And then also it let us kind of set up our big bad for the season, which is, we called them Yodok, just young MODOK. And he made sense as, you know, when you're trying to figure out who's the villain, perfect villain in a sci-fi show for a midlife crisis, it's your younger self who's super disappointed in the failure you become, you know, who has all these hopes of what he will accomplish. And then he meets his future self. He's like, this is it. So we're like, well, that's going to be the perfect character to be a thorn in his side for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
It's awesome. My favorite episode is the Asgard episode. Purely for the screaming goat. I was watching it in like chunks, so I was watching like 2 episodes at a time. So I get through that episode, and I think I actually went to Tim's store that day and like, guys, if you're not watching this MODOK show, you really, really need to watch this. You need to watch this scene because it's just so stupid that it's, I laughed every time that goat screamed and then I'd have to rewind and watch it. So I then like pulled it up on my phone, like loaded my Hulu app and just showed them. And they were just like, that really is kind of dumb. And then they like watched it and they were like, oh, this is really good.
I love that bit too. Cause I we were like, all right, he shouldn't be able to just like get around like in Asgard, you know, his thing breaks. He's, what are we going to do? And I was like, well, I remember in like Thor, he has this like chariot with goats, like Tooth Gnasher or whatever. And yeah. I was like, maybe we can do something there, but he gets the worst goats. He gets like a fainting goat and a screaming goat. And they're, it's like the worst way to get around Asgard, but he just commits to them. So it was a really funny one. And that was one, that was like a really personal episode for me a little bit, where I think that story of MODOK and his son is definitely pulled from me and my kid. Cause I was like a very sensitive person growing up and, you know, was always terrified of embarrassing myself and had a ton of anxiety. And then, you know, I have a son who's just like super competent and like loves what he loves. And I feel like I'm always trying to protect him from, you don't want him to endure the same, you know, pain you had growing up being in school. And he's like, what are you doing? Leave me alone. I'm fine. You know, and you're like projecting your own bullshit onto a kid. So that was a really fun one to kind of let that play out. I'm trying to think, there was originally, I think the original pitch was that he was gonna not want to have a bar mitzvah at all. And then MODOK was going to take him to Asgard to meet like the god of bar mitzvahs or something like that. And then somehow he was going to end up being the first male, Lou would become the first male Valkyrie. But I think we scrapped that for something a little easier to digest. And I think we end up with a really good version of that. And, you know, them going to war was so fun.
I then love that the screaming goat thing just like kept going though. Like, cause then they're like the things that power the tank. And then the one goat screams, the other one faints, and then it just spins out.
It's an impressive tank he built. You think he'd find something better to power it, but he just keeps relying on goat power, I guess.
I'm surprised he could build that in Asgard, like find all that stuff, because he used all that metal to make the chess pieces.
Yeah. He's probably intending to melt that down later.
I also really enjoyed the arcade episode. I was just like, no way, they're not going to Murder
anything
World.
With arcade is great. Yeah.
That was super good. The Wonder Man episodes were great. Mm-hmm. Like the whole show was just so solid. Do you have a specific part of that season that you were like, man, I'm really proud of this one specific moment, or is it all just kind of like the baby?
I think it's two. I love that one, the arcade one too, 108, because I feel like it, to me, it's like the best version of what we were trying to do of let's tell a family kind of, you know, comedy in the Marvel universe and use the Marvel universe as a way to like, as this backdrop that feeds into this story. And I felt like having them have a season's worth of conflict with each other, with the entire family, you know, having this family therapy session while they're murdering robots and working out their problems was like, okay, that feels like what I think this show should be. I think that's, we're hitting it here for sure. And I think just the scope, like I thought they directed the hell out of Murder World. Like it's gorgeous and some really cool shots and moments and comedy. And there's a lot of balls in the air in that one. I was so impressed with the writers on it too. Robert Brett wrote that one. And so that one, I'm really, I'm proud of. And, you know, in the finale, the show was going to end, you know, a little more positive. You know, it was, that was not the original ending we had in store. And as we were nearing breaking that episode, someone pitched that. It wasn't my idea to end the show that way. And it terrified me because I was like, oh, that's rough. I wish people could want to, you know, come back for season two after that. And I think when you're a showrunner and someone pitches something that kind of scares you, you should run towards it because it means it's a good idea. And I think to me, it clicked for me in that, you know, we're doing so much work in this season to get you to care about this guy and sympathize with him. But it's not a show about a superhero. It's a show about a supervillain.
So it felt like that's the right choice, the right feeling to end the season on, and remind you that as much as this guy's grown and changed and had these touching moments with people, he is a supervillain, and this is the supervillain choice, you know? And so that one, I'm more proud of, you know, the writers pushing me into a place I wasn't that comfortable, and then, you know, finding a way to make it work.
Yeah, because you get Yodok basically tells him, you know, you can't have it all. And so that was a really cool ending for me. I think that's the thing that I was like, yes, I'm super excited for season two. It was dark, like what you said, but it's still like, at the same time, when you think about it, like the fact that he has everything he's ever wanted, but he still doesn't have it because he doesn't have his family. Mm-hmm. But he's doing it in this, like you said, in the supervillain way. A superhero would probably find a different way to do it. Not MODOK. So
yeah, and it's kind of funny. I don't know if we did this on, you know, intentionally, but the comic has a happy ending for him where he does have it all. He gets the family, but he turns them into like murder robots, you know.
Yes.
And he takes back AIM, and it's like, I can be world conquering MODOK and I can be family man MODOK because I just put their consciousness into these adaptoids. And the show is like, no, you can't have it all, and you've made a huge mistake, and you'll never be happy, and now you have to figure out kind of how to fix it. So I think we were way harder on TV MODOK than we were on comic book MODOK.
So when you were deciding on the cast for the Bar with No Name episode, like, were you taking them specifically from issues that had Bar with No Name, or were you like, where are the weirdest characters we can find?
It was a mixture. I think we all had one, like everyone brought one to the table. You know, I know like Patton loved Angar. He's like, Angar's got to be in this. And I think Angar had been in a bunch of those issues, the ones I read. I remember he was like in a Marvel Comics Presents one. Mine was Armadillo. Like, he's always my favorite kind of goofball villain, D-lister.
My favorite too. Yeah.
Yeah, I just saw today he's getting his own Marvel Legends Build-A-Figure. I'm so pumped. And then, you know, there's only two we had to swap out, and it was the only nose we ever got from Marvel. And so originally the bartender was not going to be the Orb. He was going to be Stilt Man, and he was still, so they would have like order a drink and there'd be like top shelf liquor, and his stilts would take him up so he'd grab the drink and they would come back down. But I think because of like Daredevil rights or something like that, we couldn't use him. Then the one that was heartbreaking was we found this character called Turner D. Sentry, who was like a Spider-Woman villain, a Spider-Man villain, who is like this guy who like rides like a turn of the century, like old bicycle with the huge wheel, you know, and
he
dresses in like this like seersucker suit, and he hates young people, and he thinks like everything went wrong with technology and stuff, so he wants to murder all the young people, anyone like under 40 or 50. And we had an actor picked out for this. He's such a bizarre, weird Marvel character, and they just said no to him, and we have no idea why. We were joking that he's like getting his own Disney Plus show or something, that they have plans for Turner D. Sentry. So we ended up not using him. You know, I think all the rest, we were just, you know, we were having fun going through the Marvel handbooks and being like, look at this guy, Tenpin, and you know, and, you know, Pound Cakes was always a fun character too. So it was, I think we had a longer, we would have filled the bar, but Stupid Buddy's like, we can only make so many puppets. You got Mandrill, you got this character. He's like, relax with this episode. We wanted like every person the Scourge killed in Captain America to be sitting at a booth, and they were like, you guys, you can only build so many of these.
That's awesome.
I was gonna switch to I wanted to ask you a couple things about comic books, because it sounds like that's like your first love, and I'm a big X-Men fan too, and this new stuff that Hickman has been putting out has been fantastic. I'm guessing that if you had like your dream project to write for something, it would probably be an X-Men book.
Yeah. For me,
It would be New Mutants are my favorite. I love that cast. I feel like I grew up with them. Currently the New Mutants book is amazing. Vita Ayala is, I think, crushing it. So I shouldn't be writing that book. Like, they should continue writing that book and are doing amazing work. But, you know, in the far, far future, should it ever free up, that would be one I would love to write. But I always like kind of the underdogs of the Marvel Universe too. So, like, I would love to write Alpha Flight. I grew up loving Alpha Flight.
Same.
You know, and I think there's some untapped characters there that are just kind of sitting, you know, they're using some in Hulk and, you know, some of them pop up in X-Men. But, you know, I like those kinds of characters. So I think, and especially we found this with MODOK too, you know, it's daunting to write like Spider-Man or, you know, Batman or whoever, because there's so much to get right. You know, like, you have to get J. Jonah Jameson right, and the Daily Bugle, and Aunt May, and you can't really break those toys, you know. But with MODOK, it's like, hey, we came up with a really cool idea to retcon his origin a little bit. And they're like, great, go for it. You know, I think there's a lot of freedom in taking characters that maybe haven't gotten, you know, their definitive story, or you know, haven't been in play for a little bit, and then finding a new way to spin them. So I always liked, again, like the underdog, even characters in X-Men. Like, I would love to do like a Jamie Madrox comic, or
yeah,
a Danny Moonstar
like X-Factor comic. Would it be like, oh, that's always been my run. Maybe you should do for the next MODOK volume, which I assume you guys are probably thinking about, at least against Great Lakes Avengers, or have them show up on the show.
Yeah,
like that would be some characters fantastic. They're not going to care about. Come on.
Yeah, well, it's funny you mentioned it, because I was consulting on some of the other shows. Two of them ended up not going forward, but there were some Great Lakes Avengers characters being thrown around on some of those other ones. What? So sorry, Great Lake Avengers fans, you almost had them on television. But I'm sure they'll pop up. I mean, at the rate the MCU is going, introducing characters, like, probably next year we'll get Great Lakes Avengers. Like, I wasn't expecting, you know, to see, you know, Baron Zemo this fast, or Kang, or, you know, it's like, it's insane how deep in we are now with a lot of these characters. Agatha Harkness, like, that wasn't on the top of my list of people I expected to be on TV this year. Yeah. So I think we'll get a lot of those favorites soon enough.
That's awesome.
Well, I guess now we should probably go through the list of names that everybody came up with. And Ron wants me to let you know that he's a huge fan of yours now, because he's a huge Alpha Flight fan. So
awesome. We got to stick together, us Alpha Flight fans.
I feel like it would be great to see them go back and do Alpha Flight, but I feel like they've lost their way of how to get it back to Alpha Flight, because they did the space stuff. Now they're doing the Gamma Flight. And I feel like they just don't know how to, like, get it from those points back to, you know, the original Alpha Flight. But I would love to see that. I think that would be amazing.
Yeah, I love all those characters. I mean, that John Byrne run is incredible. Yeah.
The last time they had like a decent Alpha Flight book would have been, what, Chaos War, right?
Like, yeah, they came back from the dead.
Like a miniseries? Yeah.
Yeah, they came. There's like a 12-issue one, I think, I want to say. It's a hard thing, because I feel like for some reason people don't want to read about Canadians these days. I don't know why. Like, I remember in the late 90s, they did kind of like an X-Files-ish run, right? Where it was like, they don't trust Department H, and they're all like it's like a bunch of cigarette smoking men kind of thing, where they're screwing over the people who work for them. But I don't know. There's lots of ways in.
Awesome.
Okay. Well, let's see. So we got, for our names, we've got Carl decided on the 9.8s is his pick. Dan Hanna says the Dimensionauts, which is kind of cool. Mike Barilla said the NDCs. Ron is going to go with Thursday Warriors.
Those are people who can't make it on Wednesday? Or yeah. Did you guys record on Thursday?
Because okay, we do on Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
Savannah's just going with daddy, so that one...
The daddies? Would it be plural, just, or would it be just be daddy the collective? That's
what I don't know. I don't know. Savannah, if you're listening, we need you to clarify. And then Mike's a Spider-Man fan, and he said the web developers. So we got web developers, daddy, Thursday Warriors, the NDCs, the Dimensionauts, and the 9.8s.
Well, we had I'll one on the Facebook that was posted that was the ND Disciples.
Oh, the, okay.
And then the like NDC-iples, Land Disciples.
I'm leaning towards Dimensionauts or Thursday Warriors. I kind of like a lot. Kind of like that it is that you guys record the day after the new comics come out. I don't know what that
was. Well, normally we talk about brand new books every week, but this week, you know, we wanted to give you
I'll talk new books. Actually, I've only read a few this week. I'm a little behind, but sure. That Cable
I'm actually behind. I didn't get to do anything this week.
So. Cable Reloaded was dope. I loved it.
Yeah.
Talk about good New Mutant stuff. Lila Cheney. Sam, Tabitha, I'm all in on that book. Al Ewan can do no wrong in my eyes.
Oh, he's amazing right now, the stuff that he's doing. And then I guess he's going to be doing stuff with Hickman and Tinian on the Three Worlds, Three Moons thing that they're doing on Substack.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that. I'm just waiting to see something to actually read. You know, yeah, like
exactly.
I'll commit to it once there's something to actually get. It sounds like it's all newsletters right now and not actually comics. So I'm curious to see where that goes for everyone.
I haven't even read any of my stuff from this week. I just picked it up today, but there was a lot of really cool covers. That Wolverine Lee Inhook cover was really nice with Jubilee. I was not missing that. So
King Spawn this week. That'll be cool.
Yeah. So are we going with Thursday Warriors then officially?
We had another one, the cameos, and it is clarified as just daddy, by the way.
Okay.
I mean, there is no clear.
So Thursday Warriors?
Yeah, I think that's cool.
All right. Congratulations, Ron. Thursday Warriors it is. And
next week, we're moving the show to Wednesday. Just kidding.
So, Ron, I will have your stuff. John, you're up in Butler, right?
Yeah, it'll be there. It'll be down to the waterfront by Monday afternoon.
So. Okay. Yep, so we'll have your stuff down there for you beginning of next week, Ron.
Enjoy your MODOK.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were... it's crazy, man. Like, we've been doing YouTube for only a couple of months, and we have, like, what, 70 subscribers, something like that?
Yeah, we're getting there. It's nice.
Once we hit... Yeah, once we hit 50, we were like, we're going to give away a care package. And we gave away like a store folio filled with all kinds of cool comics in it.
Oh, nice. It was
a lot of fun. Yeah.
Oh, that Carl brought up a good point. We should, if you have time, if you have a few more minutes that you want to talk, we should probably talk about that Spider-Man trailer.
Yeah, let's dig in. I've seen a few times.
Yeah, I've watched it probably about 10 times also. So... I mean, just seeing, you know, the pumpkin bomb and hearing the laugh is enough to give you chills. Mm-hmm. And then the Hello Peter is just like, are you kidding me right now? So,
but it's the best. I mean, is there a better Spider-Man villain in any of the movies than Doc Ock? Like that Spider-Man 2 is just,
oh, that's one of my favorites. That whole train fight is fantastic. So
I still think that's my favorite Spider-Man movie. So.
Yeah. I'm going to go Spider-Verse number one for me. And then I would say two and Homecoming are tied for second for me.
Well, if we're going to throw animated in, then I will agree with you because I think the Spider-Verse movie might be the best comic book movie ever.
Agreed.
It's perfection, the whole thing. That animation style, I mean, I want a sequel, but I almost kind of don't want a sequel. Like, I just want it to be that, like, gem by itself. But
it's perfection. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. It's hard as fans because it's like, oh, it's so good, but give me more, you know?
So. I think that's the one maybe issue I have with the new Spider-Man trailer is I feel like we still, like, it's that movie is so fresh in my mind, Spider-Verse, that I'm like, I feel like we just did this a little bit.
Yeah.
Like with alternate realities in Spider-Man. But at the same time, I'm like, yes, bring them all in. Where's Tobey Maguire? Let's do this. So, you know, I think there's tons of stories to tell with the multiverse. And I think it's really cool that they're working it in, but it's like, it's hard when they nailed it in Spider-Verse.
Yeah. So we saw, I guess, for sure, Green Goblin, Doc Ock,
Electro, right?
Electro. Yeah. And they did say, I think, way Same back man. When the casting had started that it would be the yellow, like Lightning Electro, not the blue one. So him, Sandman, there's some people saying that they can see the shape of the lizard.
Right.
I had a hard time seeing it. It just looked like a black screen.
And then JB Smoove saying that Tobey Maguire's in the movie, confirming.
Oh yeah.
Some guy tricked him. He was being interviewed and they were like, hey, you know, are you excited for the new Spider-Man? Oh, I'm super excited. Okay, what was your favorite Spider-Man to work with? Is it Toby or Andrew? And he goes, oh, you got it. I mean, Toby's the best, right? And then there were like all these jokes about like people, you know, posting gifts of like sprinters and like Kevin Feige on his way to find JB Smoove. Like,
yeah,
that, he had let that go, but I think we all know. Come on, at this point, yeah. We all know.
Well, and they're still probably hunting down whoever released the trailer on my TV the day before. So,
I waited. I was like, I can wait one more day. Yeah, I'm gonna wait this one out. I don't want to like. It reminded me like when the first X-Men movie came out. And I like had to download a QuickTime and it took forever to load. So I was watching it frame by frame. And like, that's no way to watch a trailer. You know, you just want to watch it the way it's meant to be.
Did you use that one more day on purpose just now?
Oh.
You didn't even.
No. But isn't that fascinating that that's how good the MCU is? They can take like one of the most hated storylines of all time and make a really cool looking movie out of it.
Well, they're doing it with a lot of stuff, too. It's like, you know, my whole life, it was 90s comics are the worst. They suck. I'm like, that's the stuff I grew up on. And then they're like, hey, check it out. We're putting all the 90s stuff in here, and it's freaking awesome. So
it's true. You know. I'm excited. And then what was the other thing I felt like they were pulling that was kind of neat? What was I going to say? Spider-Man. I can't remember now. Sorry. Lost it.
It's my fault. Okay. I'll take the blame on that one. I was talking to my buddy about it because I said, dude, did you see the black suit in the trailer? And he's like, that's not a black suit. I'm like, and I paused it, took screenshots. When he's running through the cafeteria, what it looks like, he pulls a mask off and then he actually has a black suit, but it's not the one from the second movie. It's got some webbing texture and then it looks like it has like gold fingertips and like some gold trim on the arm. So
I think they showed toys and I don't want to ruin anything, but like, I think he gets like a magic suit from Strange.
Yeah. Yeah, they show it a couple times. Like, so the one hot toy, I think, showed him in that suit with like a blue circle on his chest. But I mean, it looks like they've got several suits in this movie. Because what's in the Spider-Man film if you don't have you know, a bunch of different costumes?
I feel like the game really hit that home, right? Where now it's you gotta have a new suit so they can put it in the game or make an action figure.
Or a DLC for it, unlockable DLC character.
Yeah.
Or maybe he'll show up in Fortnite, you know, whatever.
I don't want to eat up too much of your daylight that you have behind you. I appreciate you coming on. This was awesome to talk to you about all this stuff. So I appreciate you taking the time.
Of course, this was so fun. I love geeking out. It was a blast to be here and I'm looking forward to hopefully getting back to Pittsburgh so I can do more dollar bin diving.
Yeah, let us know. Hotel. Maybe we can work it out during Three Rivers in June of next year, and then you can just hang out for the weekend at the con. And
That sounds amazing. Yeah,
we make our own beer for it. Just so you know,
I want to do cons so badly. I was gonna do New York. Now I'm not sure, but I was talking to my friend, Mike McMahon, who created Solar Opposites and Lower Decks. He and I were like, let's table at New York Comic Con, but what would we sell? I've written one comic. Like, we just want that experience. We were like, we've always been on the other side of it, like waiting in line to get stuff signed. And we're like, what can we do that would people would actually show up to see us? So
you do a panel. That's cons. What you do.
Yeah.
Well, you're welcome at ours. So come on down. June of next year.
Great.
We do our own. This is our fifth one. It was supposed to be last year, obviously, but this is going to be the big one. We're moving to a nice convention center, a lot of floor space, great guests. Nice. Oh, it's going to be fantastic. So
got some good artists. I always bring my sketchbook. That's been my big con thing lately. Yeah.
There's some guys in the works. We haven't really started announcing the guest list because we're still trying to focus through our October show. But we definitely have some guys in the chamber of the gun, if you know what I mean. Like, we're ready to unleash some things. So,
well, let me know about the next one. I'll come in a heartbeat. I love Pittsburgh, and my wife would be really excited to go home and see her family while I went and bought comics all day. So, yeah, sounds great.
Awesome. Cool, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on again. It's always great to have guests. Especially you're the first one we've really had that's worked in a lot of television, let alone comics. So it's kind of a cool new dynamic for us to talk about. So that was great. And, we love the show. Do you have a release date for season two yet?
No, not yet. We're talking with Hulu right now about, what that'll look like. So, no news to share yet, but we're very happy with how the show did. And, we're talking. That's all I can say.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Well,
If you want to hang out for a second, we'll close out. And then Thursday Warriors, thanks for being here. It's the official. It's official now, Thursday Warriors. So
sounds good. Sounds right.
It does sound right.
It does.
So
all right. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. And we'll see you guys next week.